Hello, everybody. Welcome to Health Chatter. Today's show is on health disparities, and we have Dr. Miguel Ruiz with us. We'll talk to him in just a second and introduce him. We have a great crew. As if any of you in our listening audience have heard some of our great shows, we always like to recognize our staff. Today we have Sheridan Nygaard is doing our recording for us. Thank you, Sheridan. Sheridan also does background research for us and in our marketing. Maddie Levine Wolf, Aaron Collins, and Deandra Howard also do some good background research for Clarence and I. So we sound kind of smart when we're talking with our illustrious guests. And also Matthew Campbell is our production manager. He makes sure that these shows get out to you, the listening audience, in really crisp form. So thank you to all of you. Dr. Barry Bain is our medical advisor. Barry, thank you. Clarence Jones is my co-host for this show. Having a lot of fun. We catch up with one another often, actually, over a good cup of coffee to make sure that we're all in sync. And we're still having fun and a good time doing these shows. And when it stops being fun, we stop doing Health Chatter. But so far, it's been a real pleasurable ride. So thank you to everybody. Thanks to our sponsor, which is Human Partnership, a great community health organization. Check them out at Human, H-U-E-M-A-N, partnership.org. And also check us out on our website. We put up all our background research for our shows so you can read them. Our shows are transcribed so you can read them or listen to them at your pleasure. And also feel free to provide feedback about our shows on our website. If you have questions, put them on the website. Clarence and I will get back to you as best that we possibly can. So thanks to you, the listening audience, as well. Today, health disparities, which is actually, it's like, okay, what's new? But we'll get to that in a minute for sure. We have a wonderful guest with us. Dr. Miguel Ruiz is an internal medicine and palliative care specialist. Has been in the state of Minnesota for 25 years, nice chunk of time. After working as an internist at one of our community health clinics, he now practices at Regents Hospitals, where he works as hospice medicine physician and a palliative care specialist, assistant professor in the Department of Medicine at the University of Minnesota, and he is currently a co-sponsor of the Regents Health Equity Committee and has a special interest in the subject that we're talking about today. So many thanks for being with us. This is a complicated subject, and I know that you have some great insight. So thank you for being with us, Miguel. I really appreciate it. Clarence.
Good morning, everybody. I am excited to have Miguel here to talk about this topic because I think it is one of the, as Stan said, that this is one of the most interesting topics to have in this country, but also especially in Minnesota. So I'm going to leave it there and let Stan start talking, but I have some really probing questions to ask in your opinions. And this is Health Chatter, so we are not necessarily politically correct. We just want to talk, okay? All right, Sam, I'm turning it back to you.
Here we go. So, all right. So, you know, Clarence and I, and actually all four of us, we've been in the healthcare field a long time. And, you know, what really is striking to me is, have we had disparities? And if so, why is there so much attention to them now, or we're hearing about them, at least for sure I am, hearing about them much more today than we did, say, you know, 15, 20 years ago. And even then, we had them. We had disparities. So what's driving this discussion now?
All right. Good. Great question. Thank you very much for having me here with you. And I'm glad this is going to be a conversation because, as you know, some of these deep questions don't have a clear-cut answer or a
No
simple
kidding.
answer.
Absolutely.
These are very complex topics, and I'm not sure what has brought this to the forefront now in the last few years. You're right. Disparities have always existed from the very beginnings of medicine and history. There's been discrimination, disparities, and the forces behind them that have existed. And that is actually known and the case even in the beginnings of medicine. We have done some, and we have an increased awareness of how our early fathers in the medical science really, unfortunately, use very racist approaches to care. From the mistreatment of enslaved individuals to the use of these for experimentation to really misconceptions, even in our most prestigious journals. For example, the New England Journal of Medicine earlier this year and in the last couple of years have had some series of articles on racism in medicine and healthcare disparities in medicine. And they go to a historical review of such. So this is not a new topic. Healthcare disparities and health disparities have existed from the beginning. I think many factors go into why now, to your question. I think one of the factors is that we have had a greater capacity to measure. We have been much more focused on outcomes. And because of the technological progress and developments, we are able to extract data much more easily than we used to in the older days when a lot of the research was much more manual. And now, with powerful computing systems, we're able to extract data from electronic health records, which we didn't have before, in a much easier way. Therefore, having access to these metrics very quickly and in a very efficient way. That's in terms of the technological. Then there is obviously the whole social moment that we are living, and as you can see, obviously the history of our country and the history of humanity has had highs and lows and peaks of awareness of the disparities, racial and otherwise. And as you know, the last 4 or 5 years have been very active years for unfortunate reasons. On those issues of the injustices of our society. And obviously with healthcare, injustices are at the very core of injustice in general because of the consequences of such. So I think those are two things that come to mind. I know there are probably many others, but there have been scientists and researchers that have been looking into this topic for many years, not just the last few years. So
Clarence.
I want to ask this question. America's often, touted as one of the as the leading country in a lot of different kinds of things, and I think that we know that that's not necessarily true in a lot of areas. Minnesota is often touted as one of the healthiest states in the union, but yet when it comes to health disparities, it isn't. And what do you think is going on? I mean, how can we be healthy for one group of people but not healthy for the rest of the community? What do you think is happening?
Great, great question as well. I think one of the contributors to a greater gap for Minnesota is that the outcomes for some individuals are very excellent. So when you have a gap, the gap is the differential in between a health status or health outcome in between two different or three or four different groups. So when one group has excellent outcomes, that makes the gap bigger, even when the outcomes for that more disadvantaged group are not worse than the outcomes for that such a group in other parts of the country. So I think that's one of the contributors. And of course, when we are going to talk about closing the gap and about eliminating or decreasing disparities, what we want to do is to bring the lower group up to the standards and the outcomes of the upper or the more advantaged group, not lowering that higher group into the lower.
Right.
And I just a fact that I think hopefully will lead us to also talking into what we call social determinants of health is the fact that, for example, Latino high schoolers have the lowest graduation rate in the country. That is, Latino students in Minnesota have the lowest graduating rate from high school in the US. So we have these pockets of inequity, to call it somehow, in certain groups for reasons that are, I don't think, completely understood, but are a painful reality. How can we have such a good performance in so many metrics and indexes, as you referred to, Clarence, and yet we have these very painful realities of specific groups being really very behind compared with even the rest of the country. So,
you know, one of the things,
go ahead,
one of the,
go
let
ahead.
Me say this, yeah, because one of the things I want to say is that, you know, in this particular topic, I don't point fingers at just one group of people. I think that there's a lot of growth for a lot of different people, whether it's in providing access or whether it's providing information about this topic. And so I want to say that up front is that, you know, it sometimes in this particular topic, people like to say, well, it's their fault or our fault or whatever else. But this is a conversation that I think that we have to be really honest about, that there are some real gaps around health disparities that we as a community have to address that will benefit us by addressing them. So that was just my comment, because I can get very pointed at times, but I'm not blaming folk. I'm just saying, hey, we have some realities that we have to talk about. So Stan, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so Miguel, you brought up you brought up a point that I was thinking, you know, why is it that it's come to the forefront? And you eloquently stated the idea that we have better ways to measure. And that's good. And so I think we're at this point, we're kind of at this inflection point, it seems to me, that, okay, we've had them, we're able to analyze them. And then the next question is, what the heck do we do about it? And the next question is, how do we know if we're making a difference? How do we know if we're getting to where we want to be? So just a reflection on all of that from your perspective.
Yeah, no, that's great. I think the question is no longer, do we have healthcare disparities?
We have.
The answer is very clear.
Yes. Yeah.
And you know, it's very clear to most people, to most stakeholders. There was a time not that distant in the past where some people were very skeptical about the disparities, because hospitals and medical groups were providing good care to everybody who comes through our doors. And there was that perception of we are doing the best we can with everybody. We don't, quote, see color and so forth. And really showing this data has been very important to leaders in healthcare to say, actually, yes, you are doing your best, you think, but you do have healthcare disparities in your system, and these are the numbers. So the question is, what are we going to do about it? So, because we do have those disparities, and perhaps we do make a parenthesis, because I think the answer to that question really requires that we have clear concepts about some of the terms that we use here interchangeably. One of them is, what is health disparity?
Right.
And basically, health disparity is a difference in health, in health status, in outcomes, that is in between groups, that is closely linked to social, economic, environmental, and so forth, disadvantage, okay? So it's about health outcomes are different in between two groups. Then we have healthcare disparities, which are basically they are the difference in accessing care, in the quality of the care, in the use of the care, in having insurance or no insurance, okay? So Because I think when we talk about what can we do about the disparities, we need to know what the problem is. There are health disparities. There are now also health care disparities. That is, the way we provide medical care for patients is it has some inbuilt disparities. And then what is my area of impact? I think each one of us has to ask the question, what can I do? Because what is clear is that some of these disadvantages, social, economical, environmental disadvantages, these are huge policy, political, and societal issues that one can feel very important to do anything about. And then you can say, well, there's nothing I can do to change this huge monster of injustice. And basically, you give up and just do nothing. But the question is, what can I do where I am? Like you with your podcast today, to raise awareness, to bring the points, to make a call and appeal for change. And I think I can perhaps speak a little more about what can we do from my position in terms of being within healthcare about some of those healthcare disparities. But just to throw a couple of numbers, if you give me 30 more seconds here, for health outcomes, health disparities. One of them is, for example, survival or life expectancy. I mean, what other health outcome more final and more direct than how long a human being lives? So life expectancy, a clear gap in between black and white, people of color and white. At the level of a country, you look at a map of the US, very stark differences in between different regions of the country about a baby that is born, how long it's going to be expected to live based on where you live, based on the color of your skin. In the Twin Cities, for example, just to bring it local, healthcare, I mean, life expectancy difference in between, let's say, a few blocks west from the hospital where I work in the Frogtown area of St. Paul, just north of I-94. You compare life expectancy of the community living there with the life expectancy of individuals living 3.5 miles going west, just before you cross the river, in that neighborhood, also north of I-94, just by the University of Minnesota, 13-year life expectancy difference. In the very core of our cities. So why? Why that stark difference? You know, many of our inner cities in the US have life expectancies in certain neighborhoods similar to life expectancies in Haiti or some other countries, limited resources countries. And that's a reality in the very midst of our society in our country. So why? Well, because if we are talking about what are we going to do about it, we need to figure out what are the causes of disparities? What causes disparity? What causes health? And something that I think many people are not aware, because we believe health is all about healthcare, many people are not aware that actually the medical care we physicians provide, our care system providing medical care accounts for 15 to 20% of the health of a community. Again, the care we doctors, we think we are making the big difference here, but we need to be humbled by the fact that what we do basically is creating the health of a community for no more than 15 to 20% of the health of that community. So the question is, what else are the determinants of the health of a community? And that's back to our social determinants of health. So it is those economic and social factors. Is the environmental, the neighborhood, the safety, the ability to have clean environment with less pollution, the ability to have parks where people can exercise safely, the behaviors of this, the health behaviors of these communities and individuals. Those are the main contributors to the health of a community.
Yeah, boy, boy, you really hit the nail on the head. The problem is how we go forward. In previous, in actually quite a few of our shows, we've had a focus, or we've asked our guests questions related to prevention, acute treatment, and disease management. Obviously, Miguel, you're saying that that 20% that the healthcare professionals are helping with are basically in the acute treatment and disease management end. And prevention is a hard one. It really is. It's one thing to know what you want to prevent. It's another on exactly how it is that we can go about doing it and maintain it over time. It's not like a one-shot type of thing. Go ahead, Barry.
So, Miguel, I have just a couple of paths that I just want to put out there. In my 35 years of practicing as a family physician, I became very aware that there were waves of immigration into Minnesota in particular. I'm thinking, we had the Hmong population in the 70s, Somali, Ethiopian, Karen, Latino populations. And so it sounds like from a disparities perspective, it's always a moving target when you get a new group of people into the community who are not necessarily aware of how to access care, language issues, education. Obviously, the pie chart that I hope our listeners will go to that pie chart, which will be posted, because I think there's a sense that, oh yeah, it's the clinical care piece, that one of the threads that I see is this education piece that you alluded to in talking about the Latino population and graduating high school. And a lot of determinants like health behaviors, if you're not educated about them, it's hard to change those kind of things. And then from a community perspective, an edu more educated community might be able to have a bit more leverage, at least in terms of some of the social and economic factors. I was, and I will get to a question or a thing for more conversation, of how that pie chart breaks things up, to see where the big levers are. And it seems like the bigger the piece of that pie, the more complicated that it is to get into that. But to circle back, I was just wondering what you have seen regarding influx of groups from other countries that have different, customs, different cultures. And then as a Caucasian physician, my cultural competency early on was very low. And I was very grateful to be able to have this initiative to really understand what you have to do to be culturally competent. And it really changes the face of how you interact with patients. Understanding that, a Hmong patient can relate better with a Hmong physician. Okay. A Latino patient can, have a better relationship potentially with a Latino physician. And so that's another piece, is that minority groups are tend to be underrepresented as well within the medical community. So I'll just kind of, those are my thinkings about this. I just wonder if you could maybe touch on some of those or share some of your perspectives. Be very interested in hearing that.
Thank you, Barry. I think you bring a very important point, and obviously coming from your own experience, a realization that, boy, this is a challenging area to tackle, and yet is actionable. There are things that one can do that are specific and that make a difference. I think COVID-19, I think this pandemic has really given us another view of the impact of this social
It was a wake up call.
Totally. I mean, the impact of our of the socioeconomic and educational level and so forth, we saw clearly that Latino Black were not only affected more by infected more than whites, but also got sicker and had higher mortality. So a lot of has gone into why, and I remember reading a study from Harvard, looking at their population in Massachusetts, in which they realized clearly identified for the Hispanic Latino was the fact that they were living in overcrowded houses with multi-generational members of the family. Meaning children that were going to school and going out with elderly parents who were living in this under the same roof and without little ability to do more isolation when one was infected, with less health insurance to go and be tested, with perhaps less means to drive to a testing site than somebody who may have access to a car, and also with some of those middle-aged individuals in that same house working in a meat processing plant where high noise requiring to shout and scream to communicate also contributed to higher transmission. And then you look at the Black community living in high-rise apartments, using more public transportation, and they identified all these totally socioeconomic factors that made a difference into and obviously with under higher rates of underlying comorbidities, diabetes and pulmonary diseases that place individuals at higher risk for complications from COVID. So just to give you yet one more, in case we didn't have enough, one more view and taste of how these factors do impact these communities who are being marginalized and who are at a disadvantage. So I think glad that you mentioned, Barry, the issue of cultural competence because, and again, one of the factors for COVID was new arrivals. You talk about the new waves of people arriving. For the Hispanic Latino newcomers have not only no connections in the community to know where to seek care, but also no health insurance. The Hispanic Latino is the most uninsured community in our country. Therefore, delaying care. I had so many cases during COVID-19 coming to the hospital with an advanced case of COVID with complications, very having to be intubated in the emergency department because they were not able to be tested, because they didn't have the health literacy to be able to understand where the risk factors or the symptoms were. But what can we do? And you mentioned the word cultural competence. And I think I have a bit of a special feel about that concept because in my mind, I prefer to use the term cultural humility. And just to make the point very, very, very quickly, the one aspect that I don't like about the term cultural competence is that the word competence assumes some degree of mastery, of expertise, of arrival. We got it. We are now incompetent. Where I think it's very important to realize from the get-go that we will never be able to really understand a different culture and community to ours, to the degree that we are competent. Of course, absolutely, one has to study, learn, talk to the community, really get as much knowledge and understanding of that group of people. But I think with the humble approach of always going with the desire to know more, to have a healthy curiosity, seeking to understand before we try to be understood by them. And I think that's something that we as healthcare providers need to have very clear. We need to really put our ideas and our best ways in the back burner and become students of our patients and declare, I don't know, I need to know, I want to know, help me know what matters most to you, what's most important to you, how do you think, why do you think you are sick, what do you think is causing this problem? Really trying to get into the narrative that they are living in so that you can, from there, start to develop some approaches to helping them. And of course, also to always be conscious about the healthcare, the power, the power differentials, the fact that many individuals who maybe may have a low English proficiency, I'm thinking about the community I'm more familiar with, the Hispanic Latino community, there is this huge differential between providers and patients that we need to really be very creative about thinking, how do I equalize this this encounter in a way that I'm going to be able to connect with this patient so that I can understand how to better help them, as opposed to just trying to think that I am the one who knows how things should be done. Anyway, sorry to go a bit on a tangent.
I just want to just quickly, just Clarence, if I can, just one thing. Sure. I really like that term of cultural humility rather than cultural competency, because I never felt competent. I had a lot of humility. I like to learn things, so it was always interesting to me to learn those new things. But I think having that mindset, you can never know enough, and it was always what I didn't know. And it was always there. There was so much more I didn't know than what I know. So maybe if I became, you know, again, less incompetent, but that you need humility for that as well. And I really appreciate hearing it put in that way. It was very, very helpful for me. Thanks.
Clarence. I love this thread of conversation.
I do too. Thank you,
Barry. Barry, thank you. And Miguel, thank you. Because as you know, I start off my conversation my initial remark by saying, I'm not pointing fingers. It's very important not to point fingers in this particular conversation. But I do hear this thing about cultural competency and people saying, well, you know, one group of people can work well with their group of people and those kinds of things. But the reality is that we don't necessarily have those medical people in place like that. So what are we looking for? We're looking for accurate and appropriate information. We're looking for authenticity, you know? And so many times people will say, well, you would work better with a doctor that looks like you. That may or may not be true. What we're looking for in this particular case in order to address health disparities is an honest conversation.
Yeah.
You know, an authentic doctor, somebody that comes in and says, look, you know, I don't understand, those things, but I do know that I'm going to show you that I care for you. And I think that that's one of the places where we miss this, is that it by saying that, well, you would be better served by someone from your own group, it allows you not to serve most appropriately. That's why I say this is a conversation, you know, that we have to have, because some people, you're not comfortable with serving certain kind of people, but I think you can say that.
Yeah.
Yes. If I may say something about that, you're right. And yes, we don't have enough BIPOC providers to care for our BIPOC communities. Yeah. And unfortunately, recent report in the New England Journal of Medicine, again, in the last 40 years, the number of Black doctors, male Black doctors in the US, not only has not increased at all, but has gone down slightly.
Yeah.
40 years. So studies, I just read a recent study which showed that if Black patients were cared for by Black doctors, they estimate the disparity in outcomes, the health of cardiovascular outcomes, the disparity will decrease by 19%, by 20%. The reality is we don't have enough BIPOC providers, but the reality is that's one of the many things we need to do, is we need to advocate for more physicians of color coming into medical school, especially from those communities that are the most underrepresented, the Black community being one of them. So that is something at the level of policy and at the level of advocacy that we need to advocate for, because most people prefer to be cared for by a provider who looks like them, who may have a better understanding of their culture, or who may speak their language.
Now, it's trust. It's an issue of trust.
Yeah, it's an issue of trust. You know, there is something there about, you know, I see you, I think you can understand me because I see you are from a similar background. But you are right, Clarence, that is not the only solution, because that's going to be an impossible target. We need to work on it, but what do we do in the meantime until hopefully one day we get there where we have our healthcare providers representing the same diversity of the community they serve? But you know, today, human resources and medical groups and clinics and hospitals, at least my hospital, is tracking very closely what is the racial distribution of our nurses, of our, you know, CNAs, of our physicians, of our APPs. We are tracking that. And we have established clear benchmarks that we want to accomplish because we want to move the needle on this area. Because it's an actionable point that we area that we can do something about that we think is going to decrease disparities and, and improve the health of our community. But yes, you're right. We need to really get to the point of trust and care, even when we have racial and linguistic
differences.
Incongruity or despite differences. And that's the importance of many. I mean, we could talk forever about what things we could do. I can tell you what we can do, what we are doing in my hospital and in my medical group. But I mean, you absolutely, you need to use medically trained interpreters when you are seeing a patient who is not able to speak English. I will say, when I'm not able to speak Somali, I need to get a Somali interpreter to help my to help me care for my patient because I don't speak Somali.
Yeah.
It's not that the patient doesn't speak English, it's that I don't speak Somali. I mean, we have to really start thinking, changing our way of thinking and removing the blame from the patient and putting it on us to be able to see what do I need to do to provide excellent care for this patient. I think those are the ways of thinking that will really increase the trust. And we'll send the message that we do care for our patients.
So, Miguel, I've got a couple of thoughts, and then Sheridan, I'll get to you just in a sec. Are we dealing today with more of diseases of our time? In other words, you know, if you think about, you know, around, you know, the early 1900s, we were dealing with a lot of infectious diseases, okay? Mm-hmm. So today, okay, where at least hopefully in people get properly vaccinated, which is a whole other subject. But today we're dealing with, frankly, more complicated disease entities, the synergistic effect, you know, a combination of a variety of multiple variables that affect a particular disease. So do you think this synergistic effect is having an effect on addressing disparities? In other words, diseases are a little bit more complicated. You know, heart disease, you know, it's like, what's the cause of heart disease? Well, I could give you a laundry list of things that cause that. So that's question one, dealing with diseases of our time. And then the other thing as it relates to disparities is this, the distinction between necessary care and elective care. So for instance, necessary surgery versus elective surgery. And are we seeing disparities there as well? So diseases of our time and necessary and elective care.
Let me see if I understand the connection here with you're trying to connect this with the issue of disparities.
And, right.
Obviously, as you very well point out, the cause of death of individuals have been, the diseases that have been afflicting humanity and societies have changed based on the evolution of our lifestyle and our
right.
environment and the development of antibiotics and treatments that, you know, hopefully are benefiting most people. Although, again, you think about infections, if you look at HIV, for example, clear disparity in terms of number of new cases of HIV in the US today, clearly higher among Black individuals and Latino than white. Why is that? Again, back to the whole issue of education, living environments, stressors of life, and so forth. What we know is that people who are living, actually, before we talk about this ACE, correct? The adverse childhood experiences. And now the researchers are talking about the pair of ACEs, which is the adverse childhood experiences, but also the adverse community environments, ACE, both of them. So even before birth, pregnant women who are suffering from continuous stress because of poverty, homelessness, you name it, issues with drug use disorders, discrimination, poverty, poor quality of environment, and so forth. That in utero, in development, human, is already being affected by higher levels of stress hormones, cortisol, adrenaline, norepinephrine, and so forth. That baby comes into the world into a situation of, again, maybe homelessness, maybe incarceration of one of the parents, maybe emotional and sexual abuse of one of the parents, and so forth. So this is leading to a situation in which by the teenage years, they're already having to cope with that added, they call it allostatic load of stress that has been affecting this individual, that may have already caused some, through epigenetic mechanisms, some disturbances in their nervous system. And that it, ultimately we need, we know it leads to premature aging and to higher mortality and to shorter life expectancy. So it's there, it's in the society we live.
Right.
So
right.
How do the diseases of our days, to your question of diabetes, cardiovascular diseases, how are they impacted by these disparities? Greatly. Mm-hmm. Because if really to be able to eat healthier food, you have to pay more, or you have to have a car so that you can buy the food in certain places, or you are living with a food scarcity type of situation because you are in a food desert. In a larger city,
yeah.
Those issues are going to make you more prone to fast food, intermittent food. That is going to make you more prone to poorer control of diabetes, of hypertension, and all the diseases that lead to cardiovascular death. So that's why, for example, in our hospital today, we are starting to measure food safety on any patient who is discharged from the hospital. Social workers, case managers are assessing these patients' access to food before they leave the hospital. And guess what?
And the safety of it.
And the safety of it. And
yeah.
Guess what? We are finding people who don't have food security here in St. Paul. Okay.
Yeah.
And guess what? Well, we have a partnership with Second Harvest or whatever nonprofit organization that can provide, and we can do a follow-up. And we can, how can we pretend that this patient is going to be worried about getting those medications that have been recommended following their heart attack or following their stroke or whatever else, when they are most primarily worried about where they are going to be eating or how they are going to be feeding their children? I mean, we
Sheridan.
Need to start building the house from the foundation, not from the roof.
Exactly.
And what we are doing sometimes with our traditional medical approach is trying to patch a sinking boat, and there's bigger holes than the medical problem, and I think basic needs need to be addressed. Just to give you an example,
Sheridan, thanks for being patient.
Yeah, no problem. Also, I love the mention of Second Harvest Heartland. I used to work with them. Fabulous company. If you're ever experiencing food insecurity, consider checking out their resources. I also really appreciated your commentary on shifting our mindset in the healthcare field to shift blame off of the patients. I think that's a really important comment. We've also been discussing disparities mostly in terms of race and ethnicity, and obviously we have work to be done in the racial and ethnic disparities. For example, the maternal mortality rates is much higher for Black women in the U.S., and I'd like to push a conversation more towards intersectionality. With the maternal mortality example, these patients are Black and women. This is two groups that have disparities, separate, but together they compound. And in our research from, I don't remember who did our research. I think it was Aaron or Maddie. Somebody did some lovely research.
Mm-hmm.
Maddie, thank you, Maddie. It's also Pride Month, and our research showed that Black and or trans Minnesotans reported the highest rate of unfair treatment by healthcare providers. How do we address the compounding effects of disparities for individuals that exist in these intersections between race, ethnicity, gender, sexuality, sexual identity? Black and trans people are going to have a much different experience than white, cisgendered. And how do we address these compounding effects?
Thank you, Sheridan. This is so important, and you are absolutely right. And I think I should have clarified this from the get-go, that it's not just about skin color. There are so many other categories that co of disparity. So thank you for bringing those up. Yeah, it is black, is a woman, is poor, is with a family member in jail. I mean, the intersectionality there is just huge. And the result of systemic racism through centuries and generations, so complex. I think something that the data you present is based on, back to the point I was making before about the cultural humility, seeking to understand. We need to listen to these communities and really hear their perspective on the care they are receiving. So if LGBTQ individuals are perceiving poor care and discrimination, we need to say, yeah, I want to hear you because you're right. Your perception, we cannot say, oh, we treat everybody the same, which is, you know, we have the same standard, the same protocol, the same algorithms. No, we don't. Because even when we do the same things, there is a human essence, and there is still the issue of unconscious biases, and there is the issue of discrimination that happens and that is there and is proven and is present. What do we do about it? Number one is we need to listen to these communities, and to be able to listen to them, we need to give them a place at the table. We need to reach out and say, tell us, how are you being cared for? How are you perceiving your care is being? Tell us, what do you see the problems are? Tell us how we can help you. Again, a humble approach to, no, I do have developed these solutions to your problem, and this is what we're going to do. No, is I go to you and you tell me, how do you think you could be helped better? And doing something about what we hear. At the hospital, we had these equity rounds. We had them for a while, where leadership, senior leadership, will go to rooms of patients who were in one of those categories, not just people of color, but a veteran or somebody who is, you know, different gender or different sexual orientation or whatever else, and try to sit down with them and have a one-on-one conversation and take some notes and apologize on the spot for whatever perception they already in that hospitalization were perceiving as being treated unequally. So I think that's the start. And then obviously at the level of policy, we need to advocate for those policies that are all about equity. And I just, let me remind all of us that equity really is that everyone has the best chance to get the best outcomes possible or be as healthy as possible. Equity is not about we do give everybody the same treatment. Equity is about outcomes, is how can we have everybody achieve the best health possible. Some people will need this to achieve that, other people will need something very different to achieve that goal. And that's where we need to customize our care based on what we learn from these communities. So community engagement is very key. And then having those individuals being inpatient board meetings and having individuals from those communities who are disadvantaged or have been made disadvantaged be at the table. But not only be at the table, tokenism, but be at the table and have a say at the table, inclusivity. So true inclusivity, not just diversity, but diversity and inclusion, meaning giving these individuals the power to change policy, the power to lead. And that means that some of the folks need to step out of the table to give room for these individuals.
Yeah.
And this applies to healthcare, this applies to politics, this applies to school boards, this applies to everywhere. That's, I think, the only way we're going to change the current environment.
You know, one of the things that I've gotten from your insights is we can learn from one another, and we need to really take the opportunity to listen carefully, hold hands together to make a difference. And if we all have that kind of mindset, I think for instance, the goals for healthy people 2030, we can start getting there. It's just the recognition, first and foremost, that we have the problems. Let's listen to one another and try to make differences and come up with ideas, creative ideas together, I think is really good. Clarence.
I tell you what, I know we're coming to the end of our show, Miguel and Barry and everyone. I thank you for this great conversation. It was very authentic. I like that. And Miguel, I'm gonna take away a couple of your sayings, like building the house from the foundation versus a roof. I mean, it's like, that's good stuff. So thank you very much, and we definitely appreciate. I definitely appreciate the authentic engagement. That's for me is how we're going to move the needle around healthcare. We don't have to be afraid, of being saying what we really feel, authentically and respectfully. And that
Absolutely.
I think is how we make it. So thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much for the conversation and great. Thank you for your also. I've learned today quite a few things from you too. So thank you so much.
Barry, last comment.
Well, I just want to thank Miguel for helping to increase my humility quotient, which I think will make me a lot smarter and a lot more compassionate and a lot more understanding. And it's one of those things that it's good to be engaging in that. Not to mention, again, the conversation here was just awesome. And I was so glad that I reached out to you to that I thought of you to come on here, because that helps my standing with standing Clarence, that I get some good guests.
Don't worry about
Well,
it. You're good with
yeah,
us. You're
no,
good
but
with us.
this was just a wonderful conversation, a great health chatter, Stan and Clarence. And just again, thank you so much. And obviously, we're scratching the surface on this. There's a lot
We are.
more that we could
We
do,
are.
but having this reflection, you need that step before you go to some action, but it just increases awareness and you just start to see things through a different lens. And that's always very helpful. So thank
Well,
you.
thank you. Thank you, Barry. I think
So
this conversation had
Miguel,
just,
I'm gonna say this. This subject is huge, and I know that you are embedded in it professionally. So please, if indeed in the course of your work going forward, you come up with some aha moments where you think, God, this would be really good information to share on Health Chatter so that we can get this information or these ideas out more broadly. Absolutely, feel free to contact us and we'll get you back on the show and we can talk about that. We reserve the right to call you back. Okay. And we say, hey, we need another shot of adrenaline from Miguel about this whole subject of disparities. And so many, many thanks. Your insights are golden. They really, really are. For our listening audience, we've got some great new shows coming up. Watch for us. And listen to us, read about us, and continue to health chat away.